Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us tonight. And you had a little malfunction there. I got fucking cables everywhere in the studio at all times. And some shit got tangled up in my bottom of my wheel on my desk chair. And it unplugged my hard drive. The network is running on, and hopefully it won't affect it, the encoder didn't stop it, just the track did. So I think that our I think the archive should be intact. Hopefully it will, but regardless if it doesn't or not, it'll probably be everything up until that part of the song when it glitched. So what I'm doing is I went ahead and just set the recorder, and I've got the recorder going on my other computer over here. So if something happens to the archive and the show from that point on is cut from the archive, I have what we're doing right now, what we'll be doing the rest of the show recording on. So we'll be able to have that up on a separate thing. So no worries there. I made a mistake of not doing that one time when that happened. And we didn't get the whole last half of a very crucial show. It kind of sucked. But we've got backups and contingencies for that now. So there you go. Glad you could join us tonight. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com is my email address. It's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Anything, anytime you want to send in and have a message or a question or anything else, GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. It's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. You can send your email address over there. And also my website where this broadcast originates from, in case you're listening on YouTube video. A lot of people, we've written a lot of listeners now who are listening to us on YouTube subscription. So I want to make sure I give out information about the website in case you're listening in some other format now. www.theglobalreality.com. If you just go to Google and type Josh Reeves, it's another easy way to remember. You can tell people that. We were sitting in a stoplight one day, and my sister has an old InfoWars sticker on the back of her car. It's been on there for years. We've never taken it off simply because it's a great conversation initiator with people. We were sitting at a stoplight, and this Verizon truck pulls up next to us and goes, Hey man, roll down your window. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, hey, Alex Jones for president. And I go, man, fuck Alex Jones. And he's like, he looks at me all confused. I'm like, hey man, you got a pen? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, write this down. He's like, all right. I'm like, Josh Reeves, J-O-S-H, you know, spell my name. And I was like, type it into Google. It'll be the first thing that comes up in Google, and you'll see a website called theglobalreality.com. He's like, okay, who is that? You know, who's he? And I go, he is me. And right when I said he is me, the light turned, and we went through the light. It was, you know, that shit happens all the time as a result of that. You know, then I'll give him one of my stickers and say, here, put this sticker on your car instead, you know. But anyway, glad you could join us tonight. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com is my email address. www.theglobalreality.com is my website. Archives are up there. All my movies that I've made, all my films, clips, all kinds of stuff are up there at the website. CDs from my band, The Demigods, are up there. Jamie Reeves CDs, Delphi CDs, all the records that we've released so far under our FMO recording imprint are up there. Buying any of that stuff goes back and supports our work as well. So use the donate button if you want to support us in a larger way, or any amount you want to put in, you can do there. Use the chipping banner for the bills and stuff for the month. Any amount we can get in right now would be great, folks. And thanks to those who have donated today. I couldn't have made it through today without you guys, so thank you. Especially in light of everything else that's going on with me right now. Just kind of a drag. Let's continue on here tonight. Chapter 34, Robo Sapiens. The digression from spiritual knowledge to materialist ideology appears to follow a graduated path from one into the other. We can chart this process, beginning at the top, with how an accurate spiritual perspective might define spiritual and physical realities, and proceed down to how a materialist perspective would define them. Everyone is a spiritual being. Material realities are entirely the spiritual existence. It is ultimately the product of spiritual processes and independent of all material. We've got some craziness going on here. Pages running together. Oh, okay, I see. Everyone is a spiritual being, but different. So it's got two brackets. Let me explain this. Okay, I see what's going on here. I was just confused with what was going on here. It's got two brackets. One's broken down into spiritual reality and one that's broken down into physical reality. So the first thing I read will be spiritual reality, and the second thing I'll be will be physical reality. So here we go. And then those, there's like about six of these. Everyone is a spiritual being, but different classes of spiritual beings exist which cannot be changed. That's spiritual reality. Physical reality. Spiritual beings are subject to some inevitable or unchangeable laws governing the workings of physical of the physical universe. Everyone is a spiritual being, but there are senior spiritual beings to whom all other spiritual beings are inferior. Physical reality. Material processes are primarily the result of activities of senior spiritual beings to whom all other beings are inferior. Spiritual reality. Everyone has a spiritual sign to them, but there is only one purely spiritual being, usually a one only God. The physical reality explanation. The material universe was created by a one only God. And there exist many inevitable laws of the universe that people can never hope to understand. Spiritual reality says that it exists, but it is dependent upon and arises out of the material universe. If there is a supreme being, it is probably either a material being or a scientific law. Physical reality says that material processes alone account for any spiritual phenomenon, spiritual abilities such as ESP, clairvoyance, etc. You get the idea. Modern Western culture appears to be situated somewhere around the lower middle of the above chart. Leading the trend towards the bottom is a practice known as scientific psychiatry. There are many fine people working in psychiatry, but the field as a whole has become increasingly politicized due to its use by governments in a variety of settings. And it has come to promote a strict materialist view. Modern psychiatry has sadly obliterated the last vestige of spiritual reality acknowledged even by people such as Karl Marx. To understand this development, let us briefly survey the history of scientific psychiatry. Efforts to cure people of mental affliction are as old as history. It is to the ancient Greeks and Romans that modern psychiatry traces many of its origins. More than 2,000 years ago, the Greek physician Hippocrates had classified various forms of mental illness and rejected the popular notion that mental ills were caused by angry gods or demonic possession. In later Rome, physician Galen was one of the first to theorize a connection between the brain and mental functioning. After Galen, Western psychology reverted back to a belief in demons and witches for many centuries. Perhaps the most important breakthrough in psychiatry occurred in Austria. Between 1880 and 1882, Viennese physician Joseph Breuer discovered that he was able to cure a girl of severe hysteria by having her remember and relive under hypnosis a traumatic incident from her past. Her symptoms disappeared for good. Dr. Breuer had discovered that a person could actually be cured from mental ills simply through the act of remembering and confronting past incidents, which may remain hidden from conscious memory without the assistance of a therapist. In some way, mind-aberrating pain is relieved through this process. Dr. Breuer had stumbled onto something extraordinarily significant. Yet his discovery, though utilized to some extent in the psychoanalysis developed by Sigmund Freud, was never fully explored in psychiatry. Even Freud's psychoanalysis failed to take the next step, which was to develop precision methods for helping people accurately pinpoint aberrational incidents from the past and discharge the mental, physical, and emotional pain contained in those incidents. Freud strayed off into his sloppy free association methods, which made the remembering process less precise. He also overemphasized sexual incidents. Breuer's vital breakthrough was dealt an even mightier blow by what was happening in neighboring Germany during his day. scientific psychiatry was emerging. One of the earliest centers of scientific psychiatry was Leipzig, Germany. There was a man named William Wundt who established the world's first psychological laboratory in 1879. Until that time, universities usually placed the study of psychology in their philosophy departments because of a lingering belief that there exists a spiritual side to man. It was once contention, however, that psychology belonged in a biological laboratory. To Wundt, human beings were only biological organisms to which there were no spiritual realities attached. He therefore considered his approach scientific rather than philosophical. Wundt's theory about the mind was that human thought is caused by external stimulation bringing about body identification with which other stimuli, which the body has received and recorded in the past. When this identification occurs, the body or brain mechanically creates an act of will which responds to new stimulus. There is no such thing as self-created thought or free will. To Wundt and his followers, man was but a sophisticated robot-type organism. Wundt's ideas were based upon experiments conducted in his laboratories and elsewhere. Some of those experiments revealed that one could produce the physiological manifestations of different emotions by applying electric stimulation to different parts of the brain. Experimenters erroneously concluded that the brain must therefore be the source of personality because it triggers the physical manifestations of emotion and thought. The fallacy in this reasoning is obvious. The person conducting the experiment is applying external stimulation. In other words, the brain centers are not self-triggering except in a very limited sense. The experiments proved that it takes something else, something external, to trigger those brain centers. What then triggers those centers when the experimenter is no longer applying his electrodes? There must be another external source, a missing element. That missing element appears to be the spiritual entity which produces its own energy output. Yes, the bio-etherical energy field. Although Wundt and others used the experiments to prove a pure biological basis to human thought, the results were in fact subtly pointing in the opposite direction. Erroneous or not, the stimulus response model of behavior developed by Leipzig quickly became the new wave in psychiatry and received considerable support from the German government. Wundt himself had remained the most influential figure in scientific psychiatry for 40 years. The Leipzig labs attracted many students from around the world, many of whom later became prominent names in psychiatry. For example, one Leipzig student from Russia was Ivan Petrovich Pavlov, who gained fame for his experiments with bells and salivating dogs. Dwayne P. Schultz, writing his book, A History of Modern Psychology, sums it up well. Though these students, the Leipzig laboratory exercised an immense influence on the development of psychology. It served as the model for the many new laboratories that were developing in the latter part of the 19th century. The many students who flocked to Leipzig united as they were in point of view and common purpose and constituted a school of thought in psychology. By redefining the nature of thought and behavior, scientific psychiatry also redefined the nature of mental abnormality and its cure. Methods to bypass human free will and intellect behavior modification were explored and developed. Excuse me. It says that because human beings were viewed as strictly biological, electrical, chemical organisms, all mental illnesses were said to be the result of physiological processes somehow going out of kilter. Experimenters theorized that mental illness could be cured by strictly physiological means, such as with drugs, shock treatment, or brain surgery. It was believed that such treatments could remedy the chemical or electrical imbalances and thereby cure the mental illness itself. Out of these theories arose ambulation, dollar drug industry, ambulation. I said ambulation. Yeah, well, maybe if he didn't put somebody, nobody obviously edited this book. There's just so many mistakes in this. I find when I'm reading it, out of these theories arose a multi-billion-dollar drug industry, which pours out huge quantities of mood altering drugs every year. These drugs are designed to relieve every mental ill from can't get to sleep at night to violent psychosis. In addition, many psychiatrists use special machines to send electrical shocks through a person's brain. Some may even resort to brain surgery. Yeah, full frontal lobotomies. Well, they got you know, lithium for that now. That's a lobotomy in a pill. Don't ever take fucking lithium. My God. Now that we have had almost half a century to observe these cures in action, we can ask, have they benefited mankind? Is the world a saner place today than it was 50 years ago? Hell fuck no. People are more batshit crazy now and today than they ever have been. To answer these questions, we might do well to analyze the cure most often prescribed by psychiatrists: psychotropic mind-affecting drugs. Psychotropic drugs are a mammoth industry. They comprise a large portion of the total prescription drug trade, which in 1978 amounted to an estimated $16.7 billion wholesale value in global sales by U.S. manufacturers alone. This figure does not even include sales by Swiss and other European manufacturers. An excellent book, The Tranquilizing of America, revealed that the most frequently prescribed psychotropic drug Valium from Roche Laboratories was prescribed over 57 million times in 1977 alone, refills included. According to an advertisement published by Roche in 1981, almost 8 million people, or about 5% of the adult U.S. population at that time, would use Valium in that year. Add to that the enormous figure of the tens of millions of prescriptions for other psychotropic medications, and we discover that an enormous quantity of mind and mood-altering drugs are now being consumed every year. In 1977, for example, the total number of U.S. prescriptions for 20 major psychotropic drugs amounted to over 150 million. That amounted to approximately 8.35 billion pills. Oh, I'm so glad I never got into pills. I bet some of y'all out there did, though. Don't lie. I bet some of y'all got into pills. I never got into pills. I mean, I've taken pills. I've taken stuff like that sometimes when I've actually been legitimately in pain, but I think that's part of the, probably half the part, you know, or not half of it, but probably part of the problem with my uncle that killed himself today. It's people when they live in those rural areas, man, it just, you know, there's no hope, there's no opportunity, there's nothing but, you know, bathtub Nazi crank and prescription pills, and, you know, it's just a bad road, man. But again, all by design. The epidemic drug use is not an accident. Powerful psychotropic medications are energetically promoted to the medical community in glossy Madison Avenue advertisements, in such publications as the American Journal of Psychiatry, and through workshops and seminars sponsored by the drug companies. Justified criticism has been leveled against drug-oriented psychiatry because of the number of patients who actually deteriorate as a result of their psychiatric treatment. For example, a surprisingly large number of people who commit apparently senseless acts of violence, such as shooting sprees and other grisly headlining-grabbing acts, are people who were previously treated with psychotropic drugs. John Hinckley Jr., for example, was under the influence of Valium when he attempted to assassinate U.S. President Ronald Reagan in 1981. Such coincidences are usually explained as an indication that those people were already mentally deranged before the violent episodes, and at worst, that the drugs were simply not able to help them. On the other hand, critics point out that such individuals were often not violent before their treatment, but became violent only afterwards. Did psychiatric treatments actually worsen their mental states to the point of their going completely psychotic? Of course they did. That's what they do. They're designed to make you sick. Let me say it again if I didn't say it good enough for you the night before last. Don't take their drugs. Don't go into their hospitals. Don't go to their fucking paid murderers and pimps and drug dealers, a.k.a. doctors. That prestigious title of doctor that we're all led to believe, you know, from all the TV shows they programmed us with for decades. You ever notice how they've been programming us with this, with the idea that doctors are there for our best interest for decades? Think about it. Yeah, MASH and Trapper John, MD, and oh man, there's, you know, Sane Elsewhere and ER and you know, Butthurt Anon's Unit or whatever the fucking other shows. I mean, they've been doing this for decades. They always try to paint this picture and program our idea of a doctor as this, you know, sort of, you know, benevolent man in a white coat that's there to help us and make us get better and not and keep us from dying. No. These guys are pimps and drug pushers and fucking murderers. And they're paid to medicate you to death. They get paid to medicate you to death. That's their job. That's what they do. And let me tell you something, you sick motherfuckers. At the end of the day, when the murderers are lined up, guess what? Your little Ivy League school going ass, thinking you were being Mr. Big Shits in Turdville going to med school. And let me tell you something, you're going to be hung up with the motherfucking murderers like everybody else is. You got me? That's not a threat. It's a promise. One of the great feathers in the cap of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is its requirement that all drug manufacturers must list the side effects or adverse reactions that their drugs have been known to cause. Yeah, you know, today, you know, the side effects far outweigh the original symptom. Well, I kind of got an itchy throat. I think I need to take some, a sinus allergy pill here for my itchy throat. Let's see what the side effects here are. Let's see. Side effects may include lack of will to live, inability to operate a motor vehicle or carry a decent conversation with another human being ever again. Oh, wow, that's kind of bad. Profuse bleeding from the rectum. Oh, well, that sounds horrible. Pus and blood from the penis or vaginal area. I mean, this is, you know, I'm not even joking here at all. It's not fucking funny. I'm not trying to be funny here. It's goddamn truth. Listen to these ads and look at the shit that they tell you. I heard one day that said it was all this. It was on TV and it was this flowery commercial, you know, ba ba ba. Hey, let's live life. Let's live life with, fuck you up a con or whatever it was called, you know. And literally, one of the things that they talked about was, side effects may include death. Straight the fuck up. Just straight up. Not, you know, not bleeding from the anus. Not, you know, well, can't get your dick hard. Straight up death. Side effects may include death. Straight the fuck up. I'm not kidding you. I'm not making it up. But side effects may include death. You might take this and you might die. But you might not have an itchy asshole anymore if you take it. So what do you want to do? Do you want to have an itchy asshole? Or do you want to roll the dice Vegas style, baby, take the pill and, run the risk of death as a direct side effect? It's unbelievable. It's the truth. Unfortunately, by the time an adverse reaction is visible to the doctor, the damage may already be done. Most adverse reactions do vanish when the medication is discontinued. But some side effect can be permanent and cause lasting complications. This is especially worrisome when we discover that many adverse reactions are psychological. A person opening a copy of the American Journal of Psychiatry and seeing the drug ads for the first time may react with shock at not only the slick sales pitches, but also the small print. Every advertised psychotropic medication has a long list of potential physical and physiological adverse reactions. Most of the listed side effects are, in medical terms, incomprehensible to the layman However, many of them are quite understandable. Here is a sampling of some listed as potential adverse reactions to popular psychotropic medications that have been advertised and prescribed in the 1980s. The drug Sermentil, which is promoted as a drug for helping a person overcome symptoms of depression, lists among its possible side effects confusion, states with hallucinations, disorientation, delusions, anxiety, restlessness, agitation, insomnia, nightmares, hypomania, exacerbation of psychosis, blah, blah, blah. Halidol, that's a wonderful one. Oh, God. Let me tell you something, fellas. Well, ladies, too, for that matter, but I'm just speaking to the fellas here because I'm a fellow and I can only speak to the fellas, but ladies, I would take this as a rule, too. Fellas, if you meet a chick on Halidol, run! Don't give a fuck how hot she is. Run! I don't care if she licks your balls. Run! Halidol is advertised as a way of handling an acutely aggravated patient. It can cause insomnia, restlessness, anxiety, euphoria, agitation, drowsiness, depression, lethargy, headache, confusion, vertigo, grand mal seizures, and exacerbation of psychiatric symptoms, including hallucinations and catatonic-like behavioral states. Just what you want in your date. I mean, goddamn, just, you know, let's slip the bitch some roofies and be done with it. Fuck. Better than the fucking Halidol diet. Jesus. Thorazine, you know, that's another winner. Better pray to God you got some Thorazine in the bag, man. Otherwise, you're in serious fucking trouble. Thorazine, which is promoted as a medication for handling psychotic adults and children, belongs to a class of drugs which has been known to cause the following. Psychotic symptoms, catatonic-like states, cerebral edema, convulsive seizures, abnormality of the cerebrospinal fluid proteins. Note, sudden death in patients taking this drug has been reported, but no causal relation has been established between that and cardiac arrest or asphyxia. Yeah. So you may have a heart attack or just choke to death if you take Thorazine. It's a side effect. So be aware. The last sentence in the above a quote is a remarkable bit of doublespeak. It states that giving someone this class of drug has coincided with their suddenly dying, but the manufacturer denies that there is any evidence that the drugs were responsible for the deaths. No doubt it was just an extraordinary coincidence that some people have had cardiac arrest or cough reflex failures at the time of taking the drug. Fate must indeed work in mysterious ways. Stelazine, another SmithKline drug, lists many of the same adverse reactions as Thorazine and adds hypotension, sometimes fatal cardiac arrest, to its long list of medical adverse reactions. The drug is advertised as a classic antipsychotic. Norpramine, which is made by Dow Pharmaceuticals, Dow being one of the most evil chemical companies on Earth, lists the same adverse reactions quoted earlier from the drug Sermontil, but adds heart block, myocardial infarction, stroke, etc. to its list. Even the relatively mild drug Valium, so widely prescribed today, warns paradoxical reactions such as acute hyperexcited states, anxiety, hallucinations, increased muscle spasms, insomnia, rage, sleep disturbances, and stimulation have been reported. Should these occur, discontinue use. The above drugs are only a sample. Nearly every medication advertised in the American Journal of Psychiatry has had a long list containing identical or similar potential adverse reactions. The implications of this are significant. These drugs have been known to sometimes seriously worsen a person's mental state or cause mental problems far more severe than those the patient began with. As noted, physicians prescribe these drugs because the severe adverse reactions reportedly occur only in a minority of cases, and many side effects are reversible by discontinuing the drug. However, the road back from many adverse reactions can be a long one. The person suffering a psychotic break, whether from emotional stress or a drug, may take a long time to recover. In the meantime, he may do considerable damage to himself or to others. When we consider the enormous scale on which these drugs are prescribed, even a small percentage of patients suffering a severe psychological reaction will amount to a large number of individuals. This immediately explains the puzzle of why some mental patients seem to truly go off the deep end after treatment. Regrettably, few people will blame the drug, even in cases where the drug may be the cause. But we will instead blame the patient. He was teetering near the edge anyway, or look at what society's done to this poor, crazy individual. The great tragedy is that some children may be affected by this. Many schools and treatment centers are quick to give powerful psychotropics to problem children and adolescents. It is argued that the number of people who are helped by the drugs far exceed those who are worsened. Advocates cite statistics showing that drugs enable many patients to leave psychiatric institutions sooner and return to the community. Psychotropic drugs seem to enable some people to keep their psychological symptoms under control, enough for them to lead useful lives in society. You know what? That is true. You know, there are... We can talk all night about how bad this stuff is, and we're all aware of it. And there are people out there that are on these drugs that are aware that they're bad. And while I feel that no one should be on these drugs and that there are naturally, I just think the drugs are a cop-out. I think I really do. But there are some people out there who, you know, are convinced and will tell you 7 ways to Sunday that, you know, they can't operate without them, and they believe that, and it's sad they believe that. And then they'll say, no, I don't believe it. It's true. If I don't have it, I would go crazy. Well, anything can be worked through. Anything can be treated. We don't need these motherfuckers' chemicals to fix our brains. We can fix our brains on our own. And not only that, who's to say, who's to judge that maybe you're supposed to be that way? You know, maybe some of us are supposed to be fucking nuts. As many psychiatrists acknowledge, psychotropic drugs rarely cure mental illness. They simply suppress the symptoms. In this respect, psychotropics are like cold medicines, which can make a person feel better and appear healthier, but they rarely cure the underlying illness itself. When a person is removed from the medication, the symptoms usually recur. The patient functions no better than he or she did before, may even be worse off from having suffered side effects from the drug. Many psychiatrists, therefore, do not speak of cure, but of maintenance. Psychiatry boosts a low cure rate, but a high maintenance rate. As long as factories churn out pills, drug maintenance can continue. Is this fair to the patient? In the long run, is society really being helped? The danger with maintenance-oriented psychiatry is that mental illness is a serious contagion. I got to get a drink real quick. Hold on. All right. Sorry about that. So I can go for long stretches at a time sometimes. The problem is I don't stop and get a drink, and then my throat's sore, and I'm, you know. So give me just a second here. All right. The danger with maintenance-oriented psychiatry is that mental illness is in a sense contagious. This fact is most obvious in the phenomenon of mob psychology. As well as in other circumstances, if people are not actually being cured of mental ills, but are only having their symptoms masked, and meanwhile mental aberration spreads from other causes, it follows that mental illness will probably increase in any society relying upon drug therapy. Again, bingo, by design. That's what they want. They know that as well as Bramley does here in this writing. That's the plan. If psychotropics are also slamming thousands of people every year into a deeper psychological morass because of dangerous side effects, we can see that the drug-oriented psychiatry risks pushing a society to ruin. Yet psychotropics constitute the main form of therapy in most psychiatric institutions today. The dangers of heavy psychotropic drugs are increased by another factor. A large problem factor facing today's psychological psychiatric community is the abnormally high suicide rate of its practitioners. Psychiatrists in the United States have a suicide rate about six times that of the general population. The highest percentage of those self-inflicted deaths occur among practitioners working in mental hospitals. This high suicide rate is often viewed as an occupational hazard caused by frustration and by a psychiatrist's continuous contact with mental illness. Whatever the cause of it may be, this suicide statistic is a reason to be concerned for the welfare of mental patients. Suicides are usually preceded by a period of declining mental health. One rarely finds a genuinely stable and well-adjusted person committing suicide. One of the major duties of a psychiatrist is accurate diagnosis and proper treatment, yet one of the most common manifestations of mental illness is the visualization of one's own problems in other people. A psychiatrist in a pre-suicidal state therefore risks being the source of grievous misdiagnosis because he may diagnose a patient as having what the doctor is actually suffering from. Because wrong diagnosis and mistreatment can ruin a person's life, especially in a hospital setting where strong psychotropics, shock therapy, and psychosurgery are used, it is vital that the treating psychiatrists and technicians be genuinely sane, social, and well-adjusted. Sadly, a statistically large minority of them are not. The epidemic of use of psychotropic drugs creates yet another significant problem. Drug abuse is considered one of today's major social ills. Law enforcement agencies spend an enormous amount of time and money to combat it. The fight against drug abuse is based on the philosophy that people should not take illegal drugs to alter their moods or mental states. Modern psychiatry defeats this campaign. Drug-oriented psychiatry tells us feeling depressed? Take a drug. Feeling too happy or manic? Take a drug. Feeling unable to cope? Take a drug. Feeling too able to cope? Megalomaniacal, take a drug. Feeling confused and uncertain, take a drug. Feeling too certain or delusional, take a drug.
Suck Satan's cock.
Take a drug. Seeing things that aren't there, hallucinations.
Suck Satan's cock.
Take a drug. Not seeing things that are there.
Suck Satan's cock.
Take a drug. Maintenance-oriented psychiatry promotes the very attitude with which the illegal drug trade flourishes. Want to feel better mentally and emotionally? Take a drug. The great irony is that some of the very same conservative law and order judges and lawmakers who demand stiffer penalties against illegal drug pushers are among those who are the quickest to set up the legal machinery for committing people involuntarily to mental institutions where drugs as powerful as anything on the illegal market are routinely and openly used. The purpose of this discussion is not to impugn the general mental therapy field. As I mentioned earlier, there are many fine psychiatrists in practice today, and it should also be noted that many therapists and counselors who specialize in communication-oriented therapy, talking without drugs, achieve excellent results and do much to help their clients. To understand the specific problems of scientific psychiatry, it is perhaps wise to remember that psychiatrists, but not most psychologists, are people with medical degrees. Doctors are trained in medical schools to cure physical problems by physical means, bombard an infection with antibiotics, or fix a broken leg with a cast. Where many doctors stray is their belief that a mental problem is the same as a broken leg or a viral infection, and so they bombard the mental illness with a drug or they shock it with electricity. Such an approach misses the mark because a broken mind must be healed by an entirely different set of rules. This is well recognized by the fact that most nations permit people to become therapists and counselors without a medical degree. Have philosophies of strict materialism brought about a flourishing psychiatric profession which is bringing about greater sanity to patients, practitioners, and the world as a whole? Sadly, the answer seems to be no. Psychiatry started on the right track when it discovered that the mind could be cured of its inorganic ills by confronting past hidden traumas. But it failed to develop that discovery beyond the crude and haphazard techniques used today in psychotherapy. Psychiatry was derailed when it began to mask mental problems with chemicals, and when it developed bizarre methods for bypassing individual free will in favor of stimulus response manipulation, or better known as behavior modification. It is perhaps time to move away from the strict materialist perspective, to get off the drugs, and to begin restoring a sense of respect for the free will and intellect of human beings. We may then be able to truly start back on the road to genuine mental, social, and spiritual recovery for the human race. So that's the end of chapter 4 there of The Gods of Eden by William Bramley. Next time we'll start reading chapter 35, Saint Germain Returns. Remember we talked about the Count of Saint Germain, the immortal guy that was popping up everywhere? There can be only one. Goddamn, I was prepared for a lot of shit, but I should have fucking known. I should have known the immortals would be in there at some point. Well, yeah, that's our next chapter, so we'll get into that next time. Hey, you know, send all your healing energy you can towards my dad, Bart Reeves, please. We need it right now. We're not giving up on him. We're going to keep doing everything we can to keep him with us as long as we can. And your love and healing energy just could really go a long way right now. So please send that our way. And I'm going to miss my Uncle Steve. I'm going to miss him. He was one of my favorite people, even though he was a fuck up and he was a druggie and he was, you know, whatever else. He was still my uncle and I loved him, so I'm going to miss him. All right. Well, you guys have a good one. Donate support to our work if you can, man, at the website, theglobalradio.com. Chipping banners there and donate buttons there. Just need all the support I can get financially, energy-wise, everything. I just need you guys to need some support, man, right now, you know? So I love you guys so much. We'll see you next time for the show. You guys have a great night. I love you guys more than you know. We'll see you on the next go-around, man. We'll see you. I don't know when that's going to be. I might do a show tomorrow. I might do a show this weekend. Who knows? I might do a show until Monday. I don't know. But we'll soldier on here. You guys have a great one. Take care.